Hello everyone, and welcome to this episode of Education for Climate Talks, a podcast series for the Education for Climate community, as well as anyone who has passion for ESD, Education for Sustainable Development. In this podcast series, we address topics such as green careers, teacher training, transitions to sustainability, the whole school approach, green skills, awareness raising, and much more. My name is Trina, and I'm your host. And today's episode is going to be about COP30, which recently concluded. And to talk about COP30, I have invited Jan Sadadu, Head of International Relations at OCE, Office for Climate Education. Welcome, Jan. Thank you for accepting the invitation.
Hi, Trina. Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
So before I ask in what capacity you attended COP, could you maybe tell us a little bit about what COP is, COP30? What does COP stand for? And maybe pretend you're talking to someone who doesn't know the UN world at all.
Thank you for this question, Trina. It's the one we get often. So COP, COP stands for Conference of Parties. One can imagine this as a yearly meeting on climate change organized by the United Nations. 30 means it has happened already 30 times, one per year. So it's been already 30 years that we've had a yearly gathering of nations from around the world to try to get together every year and reach agreements in order to tackle our climate crisis.
And then why were you there?
That's also a very good question. With the Office for Climate Education, we've been attending COP for a few years now, five on my end. And we are at COP with a very clear messaging. We're not alone at COP, but together with other education actors, we're pushing or advocating for education to be recognized as an adaptation measure in the realm of climate change. So we bring education to very different spaces in COP, and perhaps we can deep dive on them a little bit later. But you know, you have the negotiation spaces at COP, of course, but you also have the within the blue zone, which is a diplomatic zone, you also have the pavilion spaces. A country can have a pavilion, a group of interest can have a pavilion on different topics. These are spaces.
What is a pavilion space, may I ask?
Absolutely. These are spaces in which these countries or group of interest can host a series of what they call side events. So different types of conversations to engage all different types of stakeholders present at COP in with the objective to further some discussions that are happening in parallel to the negotiations. What we aim to do at the Office for Climate Education is to actually be on some of these spaces to bring education to places where generally education is missing. So we generally organize around 10 to 12, which is sometimes a lot, side events in different sites, in different pavilions. For example, this year we were present at the Cryosphere Pavilion, at the Science for Climate Action Pavilion, which is a pavilion in which the IPCC is. Bringing the topic of education for climate change. So we're reaching out to different stakeholders, trying to make them see and understand the power that education holds when we're talking about the climate change. And next to that, we also talk with a few negotiators, with a few delegations, trying to make sure that, you know, we find alignment on what it means to do quality climate change education and what are the benefits of having quality climate change education when we're going to be talking about taking action for climate change.
Okay, thank you. That makes sense. I ask a bit more about specific events that you worked on. Now that we sort of know what COP30 is, for the climate and education stakeholders who sort of missed out on this COP, can you tell us just a bit about what happened that's relevant for them, like maybe the bigger activities and outcomes that happened, which I assume perhaps sort of, maybe not every year, but are some of the bigger things that might occur mm-hmm. every year. I don't know. You can tell us.
Well, this is always some sort of a tricky question. We're talking about outcomes and also success measures. Success for who and success on what? Many are, you know, we're fresh out of COP, so the jury's still out on if this was a very successful or not COP, or if it was not successful at all. In terms of education, I would say it was a mixed bag. There's a few good things happening, but this was not a leap year, let's say, for education in the at the COP. Among the positive things that we've seen is that after a few years now of bringing different education topics into the agenda with different colleagues, with different partner organizations, with UNESCO, of course, as always, we're starting to see some clear alignment, at least within education stakeholders, on, you know, what it means to actually do quality climate change education. We're also seeing clear alignment on some of the challenges ahead, but also on the opportunities. And that is great. That is great to see, to hear that education stakeholders are starting to have more of a unified voice on this matter. It's really fantastic, and I will take it as a win. We've been in a few side events this time around that really showcase that alignment. Another positive trend is that UNESCO has been doing efforts as well for many years trying to bridge that gap that exists between ministers of environment sometimes and ministers of education who don't necessarily share the same spaces. So this year, again, on the positive note, is that on the official agenda, there was a high-level ministerial meeting on climate change education. And there was also education as part of the official agenda. So there wasn't a fully education day, but education was one of the themes of November 13th, November 12th, if I remember correctly as well. Which indeed in itself is great. It shows that education seems to be recognized as, you know, one of the elements that needs to be addressed at this conference.
May I ask?
Yes.
These high-level meetings and ministerial meetings, of course, it can be a bit far away, perhaps, for a local teacher in Denmark or Slovenia who is interested in these kind of topics. But if they were to want to participate, these ministerial meetings, high-level meetings, are they also, like, is it possible for people to join in online in these kind of activities to sort of view a... keep up.
No.
That's the short.
So that is a little bit of the short answer. It's a little bit more complex than that. So the COP is organized around, we could say, two main spaces in general. So you have the blue zone, which is a zone that is, to summarize, the United Nations zone, the diplomatic zone. And in order to get in physically and or virtually, you need an accreditation badge. Those accreditation badges are very hard to come by. There's several ways of accessing one. Either you can be part of a delegation of a country. So it's your country that is providing you with an accreditation badge to enter. These are not infinite. Countries cannot just give infinite badges. Or if you are observing organization of the UNFCCC, you can also request badges, and they will give you a quota, so a fixed number of badges that might change per year, could be one for again per organization, two. So we're not talking about many here. And that's another way for observing parties, observing organizations to access this blue zone. And these ministerial sessions do happen inside the blue zone. Some events are actually indeed virtually accessible, but you do also need a virtual accreditation to get into this spaces. And then you have the green zone that is nationally controlled by the host country. And there's a lot of things happening generally in for the local community. And these are spaces open for everybody. But if we're being fully honest, that really depends on the host country, what shape that will take. And it engages mostly local communities. So a lot, for example, this time around, it was very buzzing zone, near the blue zone as well. But most of the events were in Portuguese, which makes a lot of sense. So if you're an international teacher, an international stakeholder, and you wanna see what's happening over there, language might be a barrier there.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Okay. Then I also think, or I know, that there is something else that you have worked on or you're somehow involved with that's very relevant for our community. And every year our community sort of hosts a day called Education for Climate Day. Mm-hmm. We just had it in October. And before leading up to this day, it's our biggest event. It's our flagship initiative. And leading up to this day, we call for projects. And then three projects in three themes, we invite them to Brussels and they get to present in front of a lot of peers and colleagues and policymakers and et cetera. And in October, I think we had more than 1,500 people who joined in online as well. So it's really cool for, you know, passionate teachers and education and climate stakeholders to have a project that gets some recognition. And I know that you work on a similar sort of initiative as well called Teachers Cup.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Trin. Indeed. 5 years ago already, it was a different time, first of all. climate change education was way less on the agenda of many different stakeholders. And as I was gearing up to my first COP, I remember searching, having conversations, trying to understand, you know, how does education fit in all of this? And mostly at the OCE, we have the big the honor, I would say, to be able to work with teachers on the ground around the world every day. So we're an organization that works on the ground in rural schools. Our team travels all over the place, but we're also present at these high level events. So we have these two levels in which we exist constantly, and the privilege of being able to spend times with teachers in the reality. It's one that I think not everybody gets in this type of work. So I was wondering, like, how do we get teachers? Where are teachers here? I feel like everybody's talking about this magical wand that our teachers are. Okay, education, boom. Without mentioning the middle man, the middle person here, that are teachers. So based on that gap, we decided that it would be nice to create a space in which teachers could feel that they could take part in this global discussion. So we created this Teachers Cup, which is a play on word on between the cup, of course, as a prize, but cup as a COP, the Climate Cup. And it is a little bit what you described. Indeed, it has evolved over the years because it has grown a lot. The first year we went out to four continents. We drafted a few bullet points of what teachers were asking on climate change education, a declaration by teachers from teachers on this is what we need to do quality climate change education, and we brought that to COP. And from that on, we already knew that teachers are not waiting for policy to happen. Teachers are already doing on the ground. And we know that one of the main vectors of dissemination of good practices is peer-to-peer learning. Teachers look out to other teachers in order to get inspired. So from then on, every year we've been launching an international call for projects. So teachers can submit around the month of May, June every year. It's open for 3-4 months until September generally. They can submit their climate change education projects in 4 or 5 different languages, depending on the year and where the COP is being held. Always, we do this in partnership with a local organization of the host country of COP as well, to make sure that we're involved in local communities as much as we can. And teachers submit the climate change education project. This year, we got over 500 projects submitted by our community, over 340 that were eligible. This year we had categories, 4 categories that are the same categories of the Greening Education Partnership, so the 4 pillars: greening communities, greening teacher training and capacity, for example, greening schools, etc. And out of these hundreds of projects, we, with an international jury, we had the hard task of selecting 10 of them. A few per category, and they get to present in their own language in this hybrid event, online event that we do during COP, the Teachers' COP, that is joined by thousands of teachers now every year. We had as well over 1,700 teachers, I think, that registered to follow the event. Wow. We have it in 4 different languages with interpretation as well, to make sure that every teacher can select it, can speak in their own language to be as comfortable. And it's a very dynamic type of event. Teachers have 5 minutes to present their project to their community of teachers, international teachers, and they have 5 minutes of live Q&A with teachers. So teachers from all over the world can just open their mic, ask a question. There's interpretation, so there's no language barrier. And it's been a very beautiful event. It's one of the things that I'm most happy to do at the OC, because the feedback we get from teachers is absolutely fantastic. Teachers get to vote.
I just wanted to ask, is there any sort of project or teacher that stands out for you? Because I want to say as well, like, teachers is a really nice sort of people to work with, especially the climate teachers, because they have this passion for sustainability and to make real change. And it's such an inspiring group of people to work with. And is there any like project or teacher that sort of stands out that's, you know?
I think it's you cannot pick a favorite child. I will not pick a favorite teacher, but there's a few very beautiful stories that we get. And one thing that is in common every year, we had a few tears. Every year we have a few tears, because what we notice is that teachers do lack recognition at the moment, and more. And this event, in which they get peer recognition from teachers from all over the world, because teachers get to vote and select their favorite project per category. So we have 4 winners of what we call in French coup de cœur. So their favorite project. So we really try to walk away from these narratives of winners and heroes and superhumans. Because for a long time, we felt that in this climate change space, as part of the advocacy of trying to get people on board, there was this hero narrative that you needed to be some sort of extra human to do climate change, to get invested in climate change or climate change education in our case. And we really try to shy away from that, to walk away from that and say, hey, no, we're showcasing regular teachers with their regular everyday work, with their everyday struggles that we know are many, and yet they're still doing things on climate change education that are good and that are great and that are, in a way, normal and average. We're just trying to showcase to every teacher out there that you don't have to be super extra human to talk and learn and teach about climate change. So we have very inspiring projects from very inspiring teachers. And this year, I'm not going to pick a favorite, but I think there's a very beautiful story in which we have a Spanish teacher that won in one of the categories. who said is a highlight of her tenure as a teacher, which is a great feedback. And she, 3 years ago, took part of the Teacher's Cup as a participant, joined online, saw these amazing projects, got super inspired and said, I want to do a project on climate change. And there she went. And the next year she did her project on sea level rise in the coast of Spain with her school that is vulnerable to sea level rise in Spain, in the south of Spain. She did her project, year two. Year three, she submitted her project to us for the Teacher's Cup. And not only she got selected by the jury on our side, but then she got voted by teachers all over the world to be a winner. So it's a full circle moment for her. And she's extremely touched. And you know, after having 5 years of Teacher's Cup, we're getting to a stage in which we have this type of engagement now. People who got inspired by previous Teacher's Cup, did a project, submitted their projects, and now that they're stage of getting recognitions, and being now a source of inspiration to other teachers. And that is absolutely beautiful. If there was ever an objective that you wanted to be fulfilled, that is it.
Okay, Jan, that's really nice. And we're unfortunately coming to an end. But before we end, I want to ask you then, for our community members who had some great projects, what should they look out for? Like, I'm thinking about the next cup. Where do they apply, and how do they look out for the next Teacher's Cup if they want to prepare for it?
Well, absolutely. You can do a few things. You can go, first of all, to our website, www.oce.global, and just take a look around. You can take a look at the recordings in one of the four languages of this year's Teacher's Cup, of any of the previous years, to get inspired by the different projects, to find inspiration of what you could do. Once you've done that, if you lack knowledge or resources, on our webpage you can find over 100 open license, high quality IPCC based pedagogical resources on climate change ready to use in your classroom, with ideas of projects as well that you can, you know, use to help you set up, start something up. And then look out for the call for projects that will be launched around May, June of next year for you to participate. And just overall, we strive to be as much as we can, of course, an open organization. So do reach out. Do reach out if you have a question, if you need support. Of course, we cannot always answer to everybody, but we really do our best to connect people with resources and key stakeholders if we can. And we're very happy to do so. And if I may, Trin, really quickly, there's two initiatives that I think teachers can also be on the lookout for, and that we presented this year at COP as well. From the UNESCO side, we are a UNESCO center, of course, and we work very closely with UNESCO. There's this Green Education Partnership that I mentioned. I would encourage teachers as well to take a look at that, to join the partnership as well with their schools, as a teacher as well. There we have developed with UNESCO what we call the Greening Curriculum Guidance, which is, you know, it's an example of curriculum that teachers and systems can also use to talk about climate change. So I would encourage teachers to take a look at that. And we've been working as well this for already over a year now, and we will continue working for a bit with OECD, because we are together integrating climate into the PISA assessment. And now there's already a draft version of how that looks like available at the moment. You can find it on our website, on OECD's website. So I would also encourage teachers to take a look at that as well. It will come with assessment tools. We didn't talk at all about assessment, but part of quality climate change education is providing teachers with means to assess what they're doing. Yeah. And with OECD, we have developed already one assessment tool that will be part of this PISA 2029 project that will include climate. So teachers can also, you know, start preparing if they want on this topic, and be on the lookout for the next assessment tools that we'll be publishing as well.
Okay, Nice. Thank you so much for that. I will I'll put all those resources in the description for the for this podcast episode, so our viewers or audience, they can find it there as well. Okay, on that note, it was a pleasure to talk with you, Jan. Thank you so much for being here.
Likewise, thank you so much for having me, Trine.